Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:22 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is February 28th, and the ruble was down in a meaningful way today, but not nearly as much as was initially telegraphed in the news over the weekend. So it rebounded from the low and gained by about 10 rubles from the opening value. And we've seen, obviously, this is a direct response to the sanctions that were imposed upon the Russian Central Bank, and then a number of the Russian banks were excised from the SWIFT system over the weekend as well. I was wondering in the audio on Friday what really would be required for Europe to get its act together and start to act with a more concerted fashion to try and induce some real pain on the Russian economy in an effort to try and at least give the Russian administration some second thoughts. And it looks like perhaps it was only a matter of time. So the ruble has broken lower, and this is a meaningful event. So it suggests, obviously, that things are going to start, well, imports are going to start getting expensive in Russia, and there are also controls on exports of technology to Russia as well. So we've seen quite a lot of volatility. When we then think, for example, about the euro, well, the euro was down in early trading and then recouped the loss. And then gold was up in early trading and then has given up. It's still up 16, but it gave up most of the initial advance. So we've seen this similar type of action where we had a knee-jerk reaction in the morning, but then as we've gone through the day, then panic hasn't continued. There are talks going on between Russia and Ukraine, so obviously there are hopes that a worst-case scenario will be avoided. But what is it that Russia wants? What is it that they will walk away from talks and say that they got something so that they can save face and go back to Moscow and say, well, they've achieved something? And that's probably going to be a neutral option for Ukraine rather than it joining NATO. That would at least be one major objective reached. But there's a lot of questioning about whether the actions of Putin are in fact rational. Well, war and the decision to go to war isn't a rational act for most people. So then there have been lots of instances in human history where we've gone to war, and there's a cool type of calculation about the decision. It's always going to be about what you can gain versus what you lose. And the numbers of lives lost have seldom come into that equation. But what they are obviously attempting to gain is security. And they want to reimagine the Russian Empire or the USSR in a 21st century light. And they want to have vassal states surrounding Russia, and they obviously want a greater sense of security by also having those vassal states as buffers. It was Russia originally insisted that Mongolia become a country as a buffer state between itself and China. So this isn't particularly new kind of positioning by Russia, and of course they also went into Georgia about a decade ago in an effort to forestall that country's attempt to join NATO. And then of course they had the massive insurgency in Chechnya, which was put down in an extraordinarily vicious manner. So there's a lot to play for in terms of these negotiations. And gold is holding on in here. But the one thing that's quite clear is that oil prices remain firm. Now, they're not as firm as they could be. And Brent crude is still holding around the $100 area. And there's a lot of questioning about how sustainable is this massive backwardation. So the backwardation is right across the curve. Every single successive month is lower than the last. So it means that there is an acute short-term supply deficit. And when we look at the kinds of announcements that we've had today, so Occidental was up in a dynamic manner today because they've announced a multi-billion dollar buyback for their shares. And the majority of the oil companies are really very disciplined and they're buying back shares, they're increasing dividends, and they're trying to treat their shareholders better rather than plowing money into new supply. So that's contributing to the backwardation. Inevitably, higher prices will attract greater drilling activity. When we think about the oil service sector, well, it's right in the region of the upper side of this first step above the base and does look like it's going to do better from here, and not least because it is a value proposition relative to the peak value back in 2014. And ultimately, there will be a supply response to high prices. And we don't have to go out and find new oil, simply that we have to go and drill it. And a lot of the offshore drilling companies have gone bust because they just could not make money at low prices. But offshore becomes economic at high prices. And that's pretty much where we are right now. And then BP took a significant write-down on its investment in Rosneft. And Shell is saying that they're going to pull out of Russia as well. But following the big declines that we saw initially today, BP was able to rebound, and it's still holding the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, when we then think about how stock markets are performing, well, we're in a similar type of situation where we had initial weakness and then the market has begun to steady. So the Nasdaq was in positive territory for part of the day and it's in mildly negative territory today. We're testing the lower side of the overhead trading range. So it's an important area of potential resistance, and some pause here isn't beyond the bounds of possibility. When we think, though, about what's likely, well, the one thing we know for certain is that people wanted to have greater energy independence before, but it's becoming a priority today. So that's beneficial for electric vehicles because you don't have to fill them up with gasoline every day. And Tesla was up in a pretty dynamic manner in here today, and Elon Musk is also extending his Starlink satellites out to Ukraine, which is another way of technology really having a big impact on the globe, even though we're in the most basic of events in human history have been war repeatedly, but it's always been technology has driven the outcomes or the changing or the potential for a change in the outcome, and technology is going to come to bear here as well. And Bitcoin was also up in a robust manner in here today, so up about $4,000, pushing back above the 40,000 level. But I think perhaps more important now is we have a higher reaction low and we have a higher high. So it has now broken the downtrend from the peak in November, and we're certainly in an environment where there's scope for recovery. So it's broken the downtrend, higher reaction low. Those are the basic conditions for a new uptrend. And if we get upside follow through, then there's a strong likelihood that Bitcoin will be back in a demand-dominated environment. And of course, it's one of the reasons that it is attracting that interest is because there's efforts in the Ukraine to attract inward investment. So that's a significant event as well, and it answers one of the big questions about the use case for Bitcoin. Now, when we look at European markets, obviously Europe is going to be much more impacted by a war on the continent. And the Eurostoxx index is still trading below the 200-day moving average. But when we look at the action today, we see another example of initial weakness followed by a rebound, and it closed out the day pretty much unchanged. So these are meaningful, I think, rebounds off of the lows. And what it also helps to highlight is that the worse the news gets, then the greater the likelihood is that we're going to see less interest in selling down bonds. And yields will begin to contract because investors are willing to bet that central banks aren't going to be aggressively raising interest rates in the middle of a war, and particularly one against a nuclear armed enemy, and obviously where there's a real risk of economic growth. And with tit-for-tat sanctions going on between the West and Russia, and a lot of them targeting the financial sector, well, we'd have to think that any kind of effect that it has on financial liquidity, or just the easiness of financial conditions, would be met by a really quite quick and profound change in central bank activity. And we can think about the fact that despite the fact that we have central banks talking about raising rates, the M2 month over month, or I guess even year over year, is now still, even though it has slowed down over the course of the last 6 months, is still around 12%, which is about as high as it had ever been before the pandemic. So we're still in an extraordinarily liquid environment in terms of money creation. And there's the real potential that it could amp upwards if this threat from Russia and the tit-for-tat sanctions create financial condition uncertainty. Well, then central banks will step in. And that's a good reason why gold remains reasonably steady and consolidating around the $1,900 area. And it's also why tech stocks are seeming to do better, all the while commodities are also doing well. And commodities and technology doing well at the same time doesn't happen all that often. But with so much stress being put upon the fact that Russia is a major wheat exporter, wheat prices are ramping higher, and they pulled back extremely sharply on Friday and then recouped just about all of that decline in here today. When we think about soybeans, of course, Russia is not a major producer of soybeans, but we're certainly getting some push-pull going on in here, and it has continued to hold this $1,600 area. Corn is one of those commodities that is particularly intensive in terms of its demand for fertilizer, and fertilizer prices continue to march higher, and corn is continuing to do the same. So it also pulled back sharply on Friday and recouped most of the decline in here today. But we can also look at the length of the base formation, and this range that's been forming for the last year is simply a first step above the base. And we're coming back into the region of the peaks from between 2008 and 2013. And ultimately, it's likely that agriculture prices are going to break up and out of these lengthy consolidations. As we then think about how this could evolve, higher commodity prices and higher oil prices will contribute to the argument that we need to do things differently. And then That will also engender some additional support for renewable energy, for remaking the global economy, and also for getting away from a clear dependence on gasoline because of this geopolitical element that it creates. So we're certainly in a very interesting environment, and there's a lot of fear around right now, and I think there's obviously that's very understandable. And the S&P 500 is still trading below its 200-day moving average, so it certainly has work to do in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And obviously, when you get a down day, people get more bearish. When you get prices rising, people tend to get more bullish. So there is this almost Jekyll and Hyde element to markets when volatility is high. But even the VIX index, having popped on the upside initially today, gave up a good portion of that. So I think people are certainly on tenterhooks, and there are obvious risks. And the world that we wish we lived in has, or I guess the image of the world we wish we lived in has been broken by this invasion. So we have to then start thinking about realpolitik. And the fact is that some countries are ruled by oligarchs, and they do not adhere to the same basic idea of sovereignty as the rest of us do. And unfortunately, that means that there will be times of conflict. But it doesn't necessarily mean that prices have to go all down at the same time. It still is a lot about interest rates and availability of credit. And the reality is that the greater the geopolitical uncertainty, then the more likely it is that more money will be printed, and that we may even get things introduced that wouldn't normally be done during times of peace. So we could get yield curve control, or we could get taking over of the private sector banking and control of how lending takes place. These are all kinds of capital controls that have been implemented during times of stress in the past, and there's no reason to believe that it couldn't happen again in the future. And if then we can simply look at what's happening in China, where you have a control economy and the government tells you what will go up and tells you what isn't likely to go up too. So then it funnels private investment into favored sectors. Well, we're probably not going to have the same kind of ordering of or allocations or prescribed allocations into asset classes in the West, but could we have greater government control, and could we have more public-private partnerships and everything to further the aims of whoever happens to be in power at the time in service to the greater good? I think that's a very realizable prospect. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.